You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
Benjamin Franklin once said, "Money never made a man happy yet, nor will it. The more a man has, the more he wants. Instead of filling a vacuum, it makes one." Well, he should have talked to a woman, particularly to Zhou Chunfei, who was crowned in her late 40s, in April 2018 to be precise, by Forbes magazine as the world's richest self-made billionaire. For one, money for women is mostly about self-definition, financial independence, and proclaiming their triumph in a world that is mostly not skewed in their favor. And when a woman is called a self-made billionaire, there is a story of grit and gumption behind that tag, which needs to be told. Unless, of course, you're Kylie Jenner, who, as Amy Westervelt on Dame magazine said, grew up on a reality TV show in a wealthy family and cannot possibly be considered self-made just because she thought it might be cool to have a lineup of lip-plumping glosses. As Amy said, and I quote, "What these debates miss is that behind all of these self-proclaimed bootstrapped billionaires is not just their parents' cash, but also the soft assets, or what sociologists call social capital, that come along with being raised in and around wealth." Unquote. But I am digressing. On this edition of Digging Deeper, we will try and retell the life stories of a few self-made women billionaires, starting with Zhou Chunfei, the founder and CEO of Lens Technology. Here, we will speak about a few life lessons that they learned and passed it along to us on their way. My name is Rakesh Sharma, and you're listening to Money Control,
the Deep Dive podcast series.
Lesson number one, persevere like your life depended on it. It'll be safe to say that Zhou Chunfei did not grow around inherited financial or social capital. She was born in a village in Hunan province in East China and lost her mother when she was 5 years of age. Tragedies continued to pile up. Her father lost his sight and lost a finger in a factory accident. She once shared with CNBC that she had to constantly think about where her next meal was coming from and how she was going to get it. Jo had to drop out of high school at the age of 16 and then went on to work at a watch lens factory in 1986 in South China's Shenzhen city. And this is where life began to shift gears for Jo. She was noted for her diligence and was soon promoted to a managerial role. She, however, wanted to take charge of her destiny, and in 1993, with her savings of over 20,000 Hong Kong dollars, she started a business in her apartment. Within 10 years, Jo had built a factory for making watch lenses where she employed over 1,000 people. Success led to more success, and in 2003, Motorola sought her out to be their supplier, and Jo officially went international and began to manufacture glass for tech giants such as Tesla, Apple, Samsung, and Huawei. She would go on to be globally recognized as the CEO of Lens Technology. Neither the idea to start her own business nor the challenge to cater to Motorola seemed practical at the time, but she attributes her success to her perseverance and to the ability to meet challenges when they take her by surprise. And then there was the competitive spirit that made her beat out rivals and win her first big break, the contract with Motorola, even though she had to sell her house and more to be able to meet the company's deadlines. Through it all, it was her perseverance that paid off. Lesson number two. Choose hope over desperation. The Motorola contract was a turning point for Chunfei because she did not have adequate funding to deliver on time, and she often recalls what a dark time it was. In fact, she even stood on the platform at Hung Hom Station in Hong Kong and almost decided to end her life. It seemed to be the easiest way out, but then a providential phone call from her daughter pulled her back from the brink. She realized that not just her family, but her employees depended on her for their well-being. By 2004, the tide had turned truly because Zhou's lens technology sold over 100 million units for the Motorola V3 model alone. By 2007, Zhou's cover glass had beaten the other Chinese vendors to become a major supplier for Apple. March 18, 2015 was a landmark day because 22 years after her business began in a cramped apartment, Zhou's Lens Technology went public. Forbes then went on to value the company at $11.4 billion, with over 82,000 employees across China. So, choose hope over desperation. As all successful people will tell you, lesson number three is do your homework and don't take rejection personally. One thing Jo has imbibed from her difficult beginnings is to prepare herself well before every big leap, to stay ready for the next big shift, to be competitive not just for the sake of it, but to know how you can deliver better than your peers and just what the market is looking for next. And there is mental strength that, she says, finally separates those who triumph and those who give up. She did not just start her business out of the blue on a whim. She worked her way up from being an assembly line worker and later as a manager. Even when she branched out on her own, she did not lose sight of her backup plans in case things did not work out, and they often did not. Initially, many clients turned her company down, but the constant rejection made her more determined to succeed. She once said, and I quote, "The clients won't give you a better price for your products simply because you have a higher degree. Your knowledge of the business will help maintain the competitiveness of your company." Unquote. Do your homework and don't take rejection personally. Lesson number 4, update your knowledge bank. Jo has never underestimated the power of knowledge. Even as a factory worker, she took part-time courses to get certifications in accounting and computer operations. She even acquired a commercial truck driver's license. Her credo was and has been, when you have the ability to learn, you have the ability to continue to grow. So, lesson from there, keep updating your skill set. Lesson number 5. We spoke about this yesterday and we will repeat it today because it happens to be a favorite of all successful entrepreneurs. Invest in your team and lead by example. Jo knows the value of human capital and invests time and energy in building up her team, and an earlier CNBC report had shared how she once took 20 of her company's executive team to climb the Dawei Mountain in Hunan province, which is more than 5,000 feet above sea level. What was it that she was trying to pass on here? Well, the fact that there was value in sticking together and persevering, and so when some team members wanted to give up halfway, she insisted that they go on, and so they did. Her wisdom was unerring, as she's supposed to have said, and I quote, "When you give up halfway, you won't have the courage to come back and start from the bottom all over again. You will still give up. Only when we persist can we succeed. Don't give up because of a little setback." The lesson to all of us here, invest in your team, lead by example, and help a team stay together by keeping them motivated enough to stay together. Lesson number 6, and this one is uniform in all successful people's lives, failure. And the lesson here is to face failure head on. Even after succeeding at an unimaginable level, Jo Chunfei went through a staggering setback in the last few months of 2018, when after having Tesla and Apple as her biggest clients, she became an unsuspecting victim of the US-China trade war. She was termed as the biggest loser in 2018 among Chinese billionaires because her consumer electronics supplier company Lens Technology lost 66% of its fortune, or almost $6.6 billion. This was the biggest drop in percentage terms among China's wealthy, according to the Bloomberg Billionaires Index. Lens Technology shares slumped to 62%, said Business Times, driven by a sell-off of Apple suppliers as US President Donald Trump stepped up trade tariffs on China and as Elon Musk agreed to resign as Tesla Inc. chairman following a Securities and Exchange Commission probe. However, knowing Jo, she will bounce back one way or another because she always does. And the lesson from here, face your failure head on. From Jo Chunfei to another woman who is the definition of a self-made woman billionaire. If you were to make a list of people whom you find trustworthy across the world, her name would be at least in the top 5, and certainly in the top 3 in the United States. Oprah Winfrey. When we talk about self-made woman billionaires, there is no way you can not talk about Oprah Winfrey. Winfrey was born into dire poverty in rural Mississippi to a teenage single mother and was later raised in inner city Milwaukee. And today, she's a beacon of hope for millions, if not billions, of people across the world. Today, she's a global icon, a media czarina, actress, talk show host, television producer, and philanthropist with an equity that is not just about financial number crunching. She has been ranked the richest African-American of the 20th century and North America's first black multi-billionaire, and is the greatest black philanthropist in American history. To many, she is one of the most influential women in the world. Surviving abuse, a teenage pregnancy, and poverty, she landed her first job in radio while still in high school. By 19, she was a co-anchor for the local evening news. Winfrey's often emotionally charged delivery steered her to daytime talk shows, and a little-known Chicago talk show catapulted her to national attention, and she went on to launch her own production company and became internationally syndicated. In a primarily white media space, she broke race barriers, mainstreamed the stories of the marginalized, including those of the LGBT community, in the popular cultural narrative, and in 1994 was inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame. She once talked about her relationship with money on OprahWinfrey.com, and these are the lessons we gleaned from there. Oprah said about money, "Have a healthy relationship, but don't let money define you." She wrote in that piece on OprahWinfrey.com, and I quote, "I've always had a great relationship with money, even when I barely had any to relate to. I never feared not having it and never obsessed about what I had. Like everyone else, I can remember every salary I ever made. I suppose we remember because a salary helps define the value of our service, and unfortunately for some people, the value they place on themselves." Unquote. Her first salary, at 15 years of age, was 50 cents an hour for babysitting and rearranging her employer's closet after she had pulled nearly every outfit from her closet to get dressed. Oprah said, and I quote, "Her bedroom always looked like the end of the day last call sale at Macy's, with shoes and brightly colored necklaces and dresses everywhere. Just before flitting out the door, without leaving any information as to where she was going or how she could be reached in cases of emergency, she'd say, 'Oh, by the way, dear, would you mind tidying up things a bit?'" Unquote. Even then, recalls Oprah, her focus was on doing a great job and not on the money. But she realized not every workplace values what you give away willingly. But the lesson learned here is, however big or small the job, do it well. Oprah's other lesson for all of us, move on when you feel undervalued. Oprah did just that and found a job that would pay her more, or so she thought. She started working in a five and dime for $1.50 an hour, where her job was to keep things straight, stock shelves, fold socks, etc. She hated it and would write years later, and I quote, "Even at 15, I knew in my soul this was no way to live or make money. I was bored beyond anything I have ever felt before or since. I wasn't allowed to go near the cash register or talk to customers. So after 3 days, I quit and went to work in my father's store for no salary." But her spirit craved so much more. Another lesson from Oprah, find work that fulfills you, but respect your worth. At the age of 17, Oprah found radio as a medium to work in, and she loved it so much that she would have done it for free, even though she was making about $100 a week. She realized this is what she would look for in each work opportunity, this encompassing love for work for the sake of it. She said, and I quote, "That's when I made my peace with money. I decided that no matter what job I ever did, I wanted the same feeling I got when I first started in radio. The feeling of, I love this so much, even if you didn't pay me, I'd show up every day on time and happy to be here. I recognized then what I now know for sure. If you can get paid for doing what you love, every paycheck is a bonus." Unquote. But as she learned over time, money is an energy exchange following the law of cause and effect. She wrote, and I quote, "I give my energy to the work and in exchange am rewarded with a different form of energy, money. This in turn lets me acquire, create and build other forms of energy, from the necessities of food and shelter to material possessions that enhance the quality of life to endeavors that help others reach their fullest potential. All these many years later, I still know I am not my income. I am not the lifestyle my income can afford me. I let money serve its purpose, but I don't live to serve money." Closer home, we have another lady billionaire giving us some lessons. Let money serve a bigger purpose. That is the lesson given to us by Kiran Mazumdar Shaw, MD of Biocon. In a 2016 interview with Live Mint, Kiran Mazumdar Shaw explained what money and its relationship with philanthropy meant to her. As is well known, Kiran Mazumdar Shaw is the chairperson and managing director at Biocon, which is a biotechnology firm. She was named one of the 100 most influential people in the world by Time magazine in 2010, and over the years, she has come to be recognized as much for her entrepreneurial smarts as she is for her philanthropy. In 2016, she became the second Indian to take the Giving Pledge, which encourages billionaires to give away their wealth for social good. In an interview conducted by Bridgespan in partnership with Mint, she said, and I quote, "I belong to the breed of first-generation entrepreneurs who have basically created our enterprises with very frugal resources. being in a field like healthcare, for me as someone who's basically on a mission to make a global impact in terms of affordable access to healthcare, I am very, very concerned about the fact that there are a large number of people in this world who need to have some access to basic rights, whether it is in education or healthcare. This is a huge global challenge, which I think every one of us who has been fortunate enough to create the kind of wealth we have created needs to do something about. Unquote. The bottom line being, when you do make money, it can really make a difference to other people's lives as well. She said, and I quote, "The poor are absolutely neglected and they're abused in many ways because the system just totally ignores their needs. So I have also sort of allocated some part of my philanthropy funds to primary healthcare. In primary healthcare, again, I want to use technology in a big way because I feel that we have got to leapfrog if we have to make any difference to society. I have helped to create what are called Ilaj clinics, and we use technology to diagnose early so that you can treat early and the outcomes become better." Unquote. But, as she added, philanthropy has to be sustainable if it has to continue changing lives on a long-term basis. And finally, do not fear money. Ellen DeGeneres is another global influencer who grew up dirt poor, but went on to advise people, especially women, to not live their lives in fear of money. In a 2018 CNBC piece by Ali Montag, it was estimated that DeGeneres was bringing in about $50 million a year via her successful daytime talk show, her online streaming platform EllenTube, content on Amazon's Alexa platform, and original shows for YouTube and special shows on Netflix. She's a busy woman making a lot of money. But as an impoverished kid in Louisiana, DeGeneres had no idea how much money she would be making and spending one day. And she told Good Housekeeping once, and I quote, "We never owned a house when I was growing up. We rented and we moved about every 2 years, just far enough to have to start at a new school. My mother was a real estate agent for a little while, so I was always looking at houses with her. We couldn't afford to buy one, so it was frustrating as a kid to see these houses and not buy any. You're imagining, this is going to be my room, and then it was like, oh, we can't afford it." Unquote. DeGeneres dropped out of college at the University of New Orleans and began working odd jobs. Lisa Iannucci wrote in Ellen DeGeneres, a biography, how DeGeneres sold clothes at the merry-go-round chain store at the Lakeside Shopping Center, served food, painted houses, worked at a car wash, bartended, wrapped gifts, sold Hoover vacuums, and shucked oysters. This is when DeGeneres decided that if she ever found success, she wouldn't be a miser about her finances. She later said in her show, and I quote, "I'm always going to just get what I want. I'm going to do what I want because I know there is an abundance and I will always have enough. That is how I live my life. You shouldn't live your life in fear of money." Unquote. The point being that every success story charts its own course, makes its own rules. The one common thread through all of these, self-belief and resilience and the ability to move beyond hardship, disappointment and challenge. And to not fear success when it arrives. And it will if you persist.
This has been a Digging Deeper podcast. And you have been listening to Money Control.